thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
$100 million for a walkie-talkie on a pole.
Our Spotlight Politics team on last-minute maneuvering to keep the gunshot detection system shot spotter.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs.
And the impact of Donald Trump's false claims about Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio. We have local reaction. And now to some of today's top stories. Illinois Supreme Court justices heard arguments today in Jussie Smollett's effort to overturn his conviction. Smollett's attorney says the former Empire actor should never have faced the charges he was convicted of because of an earlier agreement he reached with the office of Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. Smollett was initially charged for faking a hate crime and lying to authorities about it, but those charges were dropped by Fox's office in exchange for his $10,000 bond and community service. But a special prosecutor filed renewed charges against Smollett, and he was convicted in 2021. Smollett was sentenced to serve 150 days of his 30-month probation sentence in jail, but that sentence is on hold during his appeal. In a wide-ranging interview today with the National Association of Black Journalists, Vice President Kamala Harris answered questions about the most recent apparent assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump and expressed her confidence in the U.S. Secret Service. She also answered questions about gun violence and potential solutions beyond universal background checks and closing the so-called gun show loophole.
We know that there is an aspect of this that is about treating the trauma and dealing with it at its source before it ends up manifesting itself in a problem. There is the work that we need to do that is about putting resources into communities around violence prevention.
Harris's appearance was in stark contrast to Trump's contentious interview with a separate set of NABJ journalists when the group held its annual convention in Chicago this summer. And it's one of few extensive sit-down interviews she's done since replacing President Joe Biden as the Democratic candidate. Trump is ramping up his campaign this week with stops in Michigan, New York, Washington, and North Carolina. Skygazers won't have to stay up late to catch the next lunar eclipse because it kicks off in just a couple of hours. Starting around 7:41 tonight, planet Earth will pass between the sun and the moon, casting a shadow on the moon. In this case, though, only about 10% of the moon will be in shadow, looking more like the Earth bit off a little nibble, as shown on this graphic from the Adler Planetarium. The look reaches its maximum point around 9:44. Additionally, tonight's moon is a full supermoon. It's the second of three in a row. And you won't need fancy glasses, and there's no path of totality as with the solar eclipse, but at least you'll get to see it before bedtime. So, bonus. Up next, our Spotlight Politics team on the debate over ShotSpotter technology, plus so much more right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Republicans are calling for an end to dangerous rhetoric after a second apparent assassination attempt on Donald Trump. This as a trial gets underway challenging the state's assault weapons ban. Meanwhile, it's been a year since Illinois became the first state to eliminate cash bail. We take a look at the impact it's had on the local judicial system. Of course, here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Venicky, Heather Sharon, and Nick Blumberg. Welcome back, gang. So, before we get to all those important issues, let's take a look at the drama over ShotSpotter. It is set to be turned off in less than a week. Mayor Brandon Johnson took aim yesterday at efforts to keep the gunshot detection tool operating.
$100 million for a walkie-talkie on a pole. And the reason why they said we needed it was to reduce gun violence. It didn't do that. So, you know, it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that the investments that we're making, they have to get at the problem.
All right, Heather, critics of Mayor Brandon Johnson's decision to scrap the city's gunshot detection system, they are making another effort tomorrow to try and keep it operational after a deadline that happens this Sunday. What is fueling this debate?
So this is an issue that's been really tricky for Brandon Johnson to navigate because it pits the two most important parts of his base against each other. Black Chicagoans who are reeling under decades of disinvestment that has fueled crime and violence, and who want any tool, anything to make them safer in their homes and in their neighborhoods. But on the other side is the Chicago progressive communities that see ShotSpotter as sort of a Band-Aid that does not address the real problems with crime. And they want ShotSpotter turned off and that money invested into programs that address the root causes of crime. But if you talk to people who live on the South and the West Side, they say they'd love root cause solutions, but they don't have time to sort of wait for that. And they are furious that this tool, which they say is effective, although that is very much up for debate, is about to be turned off. So there's going to be a whole lot of parliamentary shenanigans at tomorrow's meeting. Whether it will sort of amount to anything, I think is very unlikely, because the city council, despite its best efforts, does not have the legal authority to obligate anybody to contract with the city. They just simply don't have that power under the way that contracting works in Illinois, because it stops corruption.
And we've talked about this before. You can't only have ShotSpotter on ward by ward. And the folks at ShotSpotter say, no, we have not heard from the city of Chicago to talk about extending this contract or making it anything other than it's already been.
Can I do one quick fact check of the mayor? We heard him say that this has cost $100 million to the city. That's not accurate. Since the program started in 2018, the city has spent $53 million. And I think that people sort of, part of this debate is, what should we spend taxpayer money on? So I think that's something important to note.
Important. Thank you, Heather. A proposal to force city drivers to slow down is picking up speed. Nick, what is the latest on Chicago lowering its citywide speed limit?
That's right. This was an idea floated by Alderman Daniel Lispada to lower the city's default speed limit from 30 miles an hour down to 25. Now, there was a subject matter hearing on this back in the spring, and advocates say if someone is struck by a car going 30 miles an hour, they have a 60% chance of survival. If it's 20 miles an hour, that goes up to an 80% chance of survival. And really key context here is that traffic fatalities have been on the rise in the last 10 years. Black and Latino residents are disproportionately more likely to die because of a crash. Part of this is that cars have just gotten so much taller and bigger, it's harder to see pedestrians and cyclists. They're heavier. A lot of other states, 22 states, have lower default speed than Illinois does. Now, there was an ordinance introduced in July, but was banished to the Rules Committee, where laws go to die. But yesterday, it was sprung from the Rules Committee, with the idea being that it's going to get sent to Pedestrian and Traffic Safety, which would, of course, recommend this for a full vote, and which Alderman Lispada chairs. The earliest it would go before that committee is October 1st, assuming we get council approval at the full meeting tomorrow. Just needs a couple alder people to possibly delay that, but this is finally moving ahead. It is out of the much dreaded Rules Committee.
Brought back to life, revived it has been. Amanda, it's been 1 year since Illinois became the first state to eliminate cash bail as part of, we all know, the massive criminal justice reform package that was passed in the General Assembly. What does the data show on how getting rid of bail has impacted the state?
So this really is very major. Tomorrow is that anniversary, Illinois the first state to do this completely. And data is still coming in, and researchers will be very clear about that. And even some of the data that they have is limited in scope. Also have to add that every county does this a little bit differently. So although there is a state law that governs the parameters, you're seeing it play out differently depending on where you are in Illinois. But some of the big takeaways is that there has been no major spike in crime. Again, those who've looked at the numbers say you can't necessarily say that there wouldn't have been a bigger drop had this not been in place, nor can you attribute that drop in crime to this. But for those who feared that this was going to just sort of unleash a torrent of crime, that has not in fact happened. What you have seen is longer hearings, more attention being paid before somebody who has been caught for allegedly doing something, they are going to be having a greater hearing before a judge before it is determined that they have to be locked up. As you look at this hearing, I want to point out, Brandis, that Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox is one of the major individuals who'd pushed this, and Cook County had kind of begun to do this already. And she really received a lot of criticism going into these changes. And she said, now that she is no longer running for election, she really sort of let loose. She's like, I don't have to answer anymore to voters. I'm going to let my true feelings be known without any of that political posturing. And she, at a conference that I went to last weekend, really, again, I'll use the term unleashed on it. And she said that she believes that a lot of that criticism was racist.
And programming note, Kim Fox is expected to join us tomorrow night here on Chicago Tonight Black Voices. So we'll be talking about all of that specifically on this topic as well. Amanda, Representative Welch spoke at City Club. House Speaker Welch, of course, spoke at City Club today. Did he have anything to say about the court trial in Southern Illinois that is challenging the state's assault weapons ban?
Actually, no. But just a note
and
on
a word.
Note on that court hearing that is going on in East St. Louis. This is a law that's been around about a couple of years now and was put in place after the mass shooting in Highland Park after the 4th of July parade. During the 4th of July parade there. And so the arguments are playing out. It's day two is now done. It's expected to potentially last throughout the week. And what you really have is that gun owners and various organizations behind gun rights saying that this law bans some of the most popular guns in America and therefore is not constitutional due to previous hearings, previous decisions, that is, by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay. Quickly, Heather, City Council will consider paying nearly $15 million tomorrow to resolve four cases of police misconduct at tomorrow's City Council meeting. This is after, of course, the Finance Committee unanimously endorsed the recommendations from city attorneys. Why wasn't there more debate about these payouts?
Well, just a week ago, a federal jury awarded a man who spent 10 years in prison on a wrongful conviction $50 million. So perhaps the Alder people look at these settlements for only $15 million and feel like maybe they've gotten off a little bit easy. But this is a massive problem, and we heard yesterday at the Finance Committee meeting Alderman Gilbert Villegas asking city officials and city attorneys, what's the plan? Because if everybody who spent 10 years in prison on a wrongful conviction who has now sued the city, that is essentially $1.5 billion in liability that the city is facing, even before you start totaling up the cost of hiring private attorneys to defend these officers. So this is a huge problem for the city, and especially painful at a moment when the city is grappling with, a $980 million budget deficit in next year.
Big problems. Nick, before we go, the latest on problems with Legionella at downtown federal buildings.
That's right. We learned last month in the Sun-Times that employees at the regional EPA office in the Metcalf federal building filed a grievance saying they should be allowed to work from home. We obtained some information to employees that shows not just Metcalf, but also the Kluczynski Federal Building. 17 floors had hot water turned off for a time last year because of Legionella bacteria. And at the Dirksen Federal Courthouse, this has been a problem for a year now. The General Services Administration, basically the landlord, the federal agency that oversees these office buildings, has been doing all sorts of testing, has not been able to sort out the problem. The federal court actually paid for some additional testing and mitigation efforts, but we found out there was Legionella present in a kitchen used by federal jurors, as well as in the open-to-the-public cafeteria. So certainly a lot of concerns about the potential health risks there.
Absolutely. All right. That is Spotlight, gang. Thanks again, Nick Blumberg, Heather Sharone, Amanda Vinicky. See you next week.
Thank you.
And if you're looking for more backstory on the biggest news of the day, sign up for our email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. Not only do we dig into complicated issues facing the city, but we also introduce you to new ways to explore Chicago. You can sign up at WTTW.com/newsletter. Up next, local reaction from the Haitian community on false claims made by Donald Trump in last week's debate. Stay with us. Thank you. The governor of Ohio is deploying state troopers to reassure residents in Springfield, Ohio. It comes after more than 30 bomb threats had been made targeting schools, hospitals, and City Hall. The threats have come after the town became a focal point in last week's presidential debate when Donald Trump falsely claimed Haitian immigrants were stealing and eating people's pets. Officials and police there have denied these claims. Here to talk more about the impact are Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul, DePaul University political science professor Clement Adibe, and via Zoom, we have Columbus, Ohio community advocate Sophia Pierlis. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. So first, I want to get your reaction to former President Trump perpetuating this claim that he made during last week's debate. Clement Adibe, let's start with you, please.
Thank you very much for having me. It's really very disturbing. I think a former president of the United States should not do something like that. But he's been there before. When Obama was president, he did the betterism thing and got away with it. And we thought that that's gone now. He's been president. So why do this? It's just hurtful and hateful. And that's really what it is.
AG?
Well, when I first heard it while at a debate watch party, I thought to myself, oh, great. It shows his mental incompetence to operate in the Oval Office. And I even laughed at it myself, not thinking about the detrimental effect it has by way of people who blindly follow him acting upon it. And so even in the days that followed, I laughed at memes and so forth, and then we started hearing about bomb threats and other threats, and then you start thinking about the gravity of this. And as a professor said, this is not his first time. He talked about S-hole countries several years ago, and it demonstrates a lack of appreciation of the contributions that Haitians have made to this country from the outset of this country's existence.
Sophia Pierlis, same question to you. What was your reaction when you heard the president say that last week?
I was shocked because I did not think that he would actually go there on national television. But I was not surprised. I was upset, but I was not really surprised because it's not the first time he used this rhetoric. He used he did use the Mexican before. He used the Muslim before, so now it's the Haitians. And last year, I think when he was a former president, he did use some kind of language against us before. So it's disturbing because a leader should be an example, should lead by example. So when a leader is saying certain things that will affect a whole nation, a whole community, I think it's not the right thing to do these type of stuff. So I was very angry, but right now I'm laughing at it.
Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, he dismissed the claim about migrants eating pets as, quote, false piece of garbage. And the claims have been debunked over and over, as we all know. Even some of the people who made social media posts that originally fed this fire, they too have expressed regret over what they've done and what they've said. But Attorney General, is the damage already done by then?
Certainly, because, Donald Trump does have a following. I know Governor DeWine. I have actually traveled to Haiti with him in 2008, and he has an appreciation and an affinity for a personal affinity for Haiti. And so I commend Governor DeWine for pointing out that these allegations are unfounded. On the other hand, my counterpart in Ohio, the Attorney General there, did the opposite, as did J.D. Vance, the senator and vice president. And so if you have officials from the state saying it, and then you have Donald Trump that has a blind following, we've already seen what they'll do by way of the insurrection with regards to things that come out of his mouth. It's a dangerous situation, and I do appreciate. I actually had outreach from the head of the Jewish United Fund offering help for the Haitians in Ohio.
Sophia, what conversations are you having with the larger Haitian community there in Ohio?
The conversation is education. Educating them to do not let that affect them, because so many Haitians fled their country because of political instability, and they wanted a safe place to be. And many of them traveled from country to country to finally find the peace and safety they were hoping to find in America. Many of them did make it here and already started a life, and they found a good job, working, thinking of their family. Many of them already built a business in Springfield, Ohio, and they're doing well. And the conversation is talking to them so that they do not let that affect them, because whether believe it or not, mental health is well, being traumatized as well. Being able to be stable in your home, and then now people asking you to again get up and leave everything behind and run because you're running for your life, is a repeat of what they've been facing in their own home. So my conversation with them is educating them to not fear, to stay calm, and to be able to report any allegations, any accusations, anything, so that way we can have people chill.
Sophia, how's this impacted you and your family personally?
Oh, I'm the vocal one, always the vocal one, advocating for everyone, not only the Haitians. And because I was so vocal, I was threatened.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that happened.
Sure,
I
don't want to go too deep into the details, but my kids, my children, and myself will be threatened. They actually threaten us.
I'm sorry to hear that, and I hope that you and your family remain safe. Vice President Harris, she spoke to the National Association of Black Journalists in Philadelphia earlier today, where she condemned what the former president said last week.
And we've got to say that you cannot be entrusted with standing behind the seal of the President of the United States of America, engaging in that hateful rhetoric that, as usual, is designed to divide us as a country.
AG, what does the current administration need to do to better support migrant communities?
Well, I think we, as the Vice President has done, we need to call it out for what it is. And we need to make sure that we speak to the fact that that these are people here legally who are contributing to the economy, that there's a long history of Haitians, Haitian Americans, Haitian immigrants contributing to this country. And it's ironic that the U.S. attorney in Southern Florida that's responding to the assassination attempt on Mr. Trump is a man born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who's serving as U.S. attorney. It's just one more example of the contributions that Haitian Americans have made. But I think the vice president made a critical point. It's a demonstration of the danger of letting Donald Trump anywhere near the Oval Office again.
And to be clear, the immigrant community in Springfield, Ohio, they're all here under a protected status because of the status of what's happening in your home country right now. There's also been a lot of social media posts about this topic, you know, as we stated, you know, sort of making fun of President Trump for restating this story. But there, as we've discussed, there are, you know, we're looking at some of those tweets right now, but there are real world implications. Clemente Dibe, can you think of other instances where, you know, specific ethnic groups have been used as basically political pawns?
Oh, my God, we don't want to go there. I was born in Nigeria, in Africa. This is the kind of politics you want to run away from. We've seen that over and over again. There's a report that just came out from Sweden, okay, from the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance, okay? They just published a report. In the past few years, well, let's say between 2008 and 2023, the number of people who participate in elections has dropped 10 percentage points, okay? People are not voting in democracies anymore. People are no longer very complimentary about democracy or the prospects. This does not help. And this is the United States. We lead the democratic world. So what the former president has done is really to make that journey a lot more difficult for societies everywhere that are trying to build democracy. Okay. And that is the danger.
That is the danger. And that is where we'll have to leave it. Thanks to Clemente Dive, Attorney General Kwame Raoul, and Sophia Pierlis for joining us. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you very much.
And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. City Council members take up police misconduct settlements and the future of ShotSpotter. And last year, Illinois became the first state to end cash bail. A look at the impact in Illinois 1 year later. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. And have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is committed to supporting diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives throughout the legal profession.